reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 18, text 1, in the matter of a battle between Lord Boar and the demon Hiranyaksha. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, H.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daitya paid little heed to the words of Varuna. O dear Vidura, he learned from Narad the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and hurriedly betook himself to the depths of the ocean. Purport. Materialistic warmongers are not even afraid to fight with their mightiest enemy, the Personality of Godhead. The demon was very encouraged to learn from Varun that there was one fighter who could actually combat him, and he was very enthusiastic to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to give him a fight, even though it was predicted by Varun that by fighting with Vishnu he would become prey for dogs, jackals and vultures. Since some demoniac persons are less intelligent, they dare to fight with Vishnu, who is known as Ajita, a one who has never been conquered. Translation. Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daitya paid little heed to the words of Varuna. O dear Vidura, he learned from Narad the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and hurriedly betook himself to the depths of the ocean. So the pastime continues to unfold. It all started in Vaikuntha when Lord Vishnu desired to engage in some chivalrous activities, specifically fighting, and Jaya and Vijaya, his two gatekeepers, they offered their services for that pleasure of Vishnu. And so the whole pastime unfolded, the Kumaras coming there, crossing them descending into the material world to take three births as demons. And of course their first birth is from Dicha, as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Actually, at the time when Hiranyaksha is running around the universe, challenging all kinds of people, Hiranyakashipu was off performing austerities. He was already very powerful, having received benediction from Lord Brahma that all kinds of people could not kill him, and in different parts of the day he couldn't be killed, but still he went for more austerities. And it's interesting to note that even though they were demons, they understood that to gain something, one had to perform austerities to become more powerful, to gain what they wanted to gain. So they had knowledge of the Vedic injunctions, but they just weren't willing to accept Vishnu, as the Personality of Godhead, as the source of everything. And they certainly weren't willing to accept that he was Ajita, unconquerable. They actually thought themselves to be Ajita, as will be seen as this chapter unfolds. Hiranyaksha has no fear of Vishnu whatsoever. He very openly will challenge him to fight. Very openly he will try to strike him, because he has no fear. He does not understand the material nature. He only understands that he has attained extreme power. Thus he thinks that the material nature is under his control. Of course, the material nature cannot be under anyone's control because she's under Vishnu's control. And the whole material nature is predominated by the time factor, which never waits for anyone, never slows down, and never stops. So Hiranyaksha, not a typically illusioned person, because even great personalities like Varuna and Indra were terrified of him. Actually, when he goes to the heavenly planets, searching out to fight with one of the demigods, they all hid. Even though they were supposed to be great kshatriyas, very powerful, even though they regularly drink amrit, which is supposed to give them immortality, still they were frightened of Hiranyaksha, and they hid away here and there, so they would not have to face him. And Varuna, he took a more diplomatic mood, but still ultimately he was frightened to fight with Hiranyaksha. Of course, they also knew by the learned advice of Lord Brahma that no one in the material world, however powerful they may have been, could defeat Hiranyakashipu or Hiranyaksha, because they were empowered by Vishnu himself. They had come to the material world specifically to serve Vishnu. So no one could stop them. Now Vishnu has appeared as Varaha, because the work which had to be done was of that nature. The earth planet had sunken down into the lowest depths of Rasatala, right into the mud at the bottom of the universe. And so Vishnu took the form of a hog, Varaha, a very large tusk, so that he could dive into the waters and dig the earth out. Now Vishnu, in the form of Varaha, actually appeared from the nostril of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma at that time was sitting in Koladwip, just here across the river, performing yajna for the welfare of the universe. And demigods were coming to him and saying, oh, what are we to do? These two demons are just causing so much trouble. So he was performing the yajna, and then from his nostril came a small boar, which grew and grew, the size of a massive mountain, and then even larger, touching the sky. So that place is Koladwip, the place where Lord Boar appeared. Now the earth planet, due to exploitation by the followers of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, especially taking all the oil out of the earth, the blood of the earth, had lost the ability to float on the massive ocean and had sunk down into the depths. But Navadvip was still there, was still present, and will be present after the devastation. Even after the total devastation of the universes, Navadvip remains. When Markandeya Rishi, who had the benediction to live for 8 kalpas, When the time of devastation came, he became completely terrified and was tossed here and there in the waters and was actually completely cursing the day that he had accepted such a benediction. And eventually he saw a cow under a tree throbbing and landed on Godrindweep, which was still undisturbed by the devastation. And then by the grace of Srabi, he was given milk to replenish his strength, and then she advised him about the whole Navadvip Dham, explained the nine islands and their glories, and he actually, in one form, took up permanent residence there in Godrin. So this Navadvip Dham continues to exist. So there's nothing surprising that Lord Brahma was doing yajna in Koladweep and that Varaha appeared there. Of course, when he dived into the ocean, he picked up the earth planet and immediately by his touch he impregnated the earth. He accepted her as his wife, Bhumi Devi. And Banasura will become their son. So when he placed the planet back on the waters and transferred his own energy, the planet was able to float on the water again. And then Hiranyaksha came, challenging him in every way, using very ferocious words, as is done when kshatriyas come in contact with each other. Before they start fighting, they invoke each other's anger as part of the chivalrous rasa. And although those words were very stinging, demigods and Lord Brahma were very hurt by the words which were being uttered by Hiranyaksha. But Sridhar Swami has taken each of those verses where the description of Hiranyaksha chastising Lord Vishnu, Varaha, and has explained them in a different way. Actually, Hiranyaksha was simultaneously praising. He was criticizing for having fought with lesser demons and killing them even though they weren't powerful enough to fight with them. And Sridhar Swami explains that he was actually saying, yes, you gave them all liberation. And so on. He explains in so many ways how Hiranyaksha is actually glorifying. Of course, it's not surprising because, as we know, they were ultimately devotees who had taken up the role of demons. But we also see from Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami how the words of the Bhagavatam can be explained in many ways, such as the Atmarama verse, which Chaitanya, when speaking with Sanatana Goswami, broke down the Atmarama verse to have so many meanings. And different people have commented, but even there are more and more and more meanings. And so have all of the slokas of the Bhagavatam. What originally appears to be there on the first submission to hearing the Bhagavatam is not the total depth of the Bhagavatam. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami used to chant the slokas of the Bhagavatam, each sloka in so many different tunes, different meters, breaking up the words differently and extracting so many different meanings that the Goswamis, Rupa Sanatan, and so many other great personalities who are present in Vrindavan, they used to gather every day to hear the sweet singing of Raghunath Bhatta and to try to understand different deep meanings of the Bhagavatam. It's said by some that every sloka of Bhagavatam contains the name of Radharani and Krishna. So just see that even though his Srimad Bhagavatam has appeared in the material world in a particular form to allow all types of living entities to approach and be risen up to the platform of devotional service, but still the topmost Paramahamsas, the intimate devotees of Radha and Krishna, they also relish the Bhagavatam because it's describing the most intimate pastimes of their sweet Lord, Krishna. So what we're seeing, according to our particular position, according to our particular state of elevation in devotional service, some particular revelation of the Bhagavatam, we should always understand that the Bhagavatam is so deep, it is not possible to penetrate to its full depth. Gauranga sits down every day, Uchinichinanda and Advaita Acharya, and listen to the Bhagavatam recited by Gadadhar Pandit every single day. And Gadadhar recites the slokas in so many different tunes and then gives explanation of the slokas, and every day they merge into the ocean of ecstasy listening to the pastimes of the Bhagavatam. We have to somehow develop some degree of love for the Bhagavatam, some degree of intimate understanding of the Bhagavatam, that it actually has come from Goloka. It's actually non-different to Radha and Krishna, Sabda Brahma. And that we can find Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says we can find Krishna playing in the pages of the Bhagavatam. This takes great faith and great submission. If we somehow think that we can be the conqueror of the Bhagavatam, as Hiranyaksha is trying to conquer Vishnu here by exhibiting his great power. But of course, in the end, he will be slain. If we try to conquer the Bhagavatam, thinking that we're very learned, that we can somehow be the knower of the Bhagavatam, or even the controller of the Bhagavatam, then our destination will not be very good. By great submission, allowing the nectar of the Bhagavatam to flow into the ears and to fill up the heart and to come gushing out as liquid rain, then we can actually enter into the deep ocean of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we can see all of the unlimited pastimes of the Lord. So many known and so many unknown. The ocean will just become deeper and deeper and deeper. Brihad Bhagavatamrita was spoken by Parikshit Maharaj to his mother, who approached him after Sukadeva Goswami had completed his recitation of the Bhagavatam. And she requested him, "Would you please give me some little synopsis of the Bhagavatam?" And that's what Brihad Bhagavatamrita is. Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami is also deeply describing the Bhagavatam. The Sat Sandhavas, the six Sandhavas of Jiva Goswami, very elaborately describes six aspects of the Bhagavatam. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami, Nectar of Devotion, is considered to be the most intimate purport, an intimate commentary on the Bhagavatam, describing the rasas of the Bhagavatam. So can we understand Bhagavatam? No, we can never understand Bhagavatam. Can Lord Chaitanya understand Bhagavatam? No. Forever diving deeper. It's not possible to understand Krishna because Krishna never understands himself. He's always expanding, and his internal energy in competition is expanding with him. So we may study the Bhagavatam, we may learn all 18,000 slokas. We're only scratching the surface. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when he was in Dhaka, for 3 months continuously he purported on the first sloka of the Bhagavatam. Every morning, he would give a class on the first sloka of the Bhagavatam. 3 months. We can just see the unlimited expansion of the Bhagavatam. So many commentaries, and yet it doesn't capture. Krishna cannot be captured. He can only be brought under control by bhakti. So somehow we can approach the Bhagavatam with bhakti, then the Bhagavatam will begin to reveal herself. We must be very, very careful that our position is dasanudas. We must always remember this. And to think that we have become a great knower, that we are the greatest pundit, or one of the greatest pundits, is not the position of dasanudas. We're always dependent on the revelations of the previous acharyas. This is a descending process. It's never an ascending process. A foolish man may go out on a dark night with a powerful torch and try to search out the sun. This is what the demons, such as Hiranyaksha, such as the modern day scientists, and all kinds of rascals, are doing. Going out with their bright torchlight into the darkness and trying to search out. If they simply became submissive and orally received through their ears, They would understand everything of the material nature, of the spiritual nature, and ultimately of the transcendental pastimes of Vajradhama. We can endeavor as much as we wish through fasting and austerities, but ultimately it is something which is revealed to us. It is something which is given. It is not something which can be taken. Not by austerities, not by learning, or by whatever. But by receiving the divine grace. The actual mood of devotion will manifest within the heart. So Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, they came into the material world and caused absolute confusion for everyone. And Vishnu manifested as Varaha and Narasimha and destroyed them. And yet only a handful of persons could appreciate that yes, we're wasting our time here in this material world. We should actually be surrendering to Krishna. This is how much attachment. It doesn't matter how much disaster comes upon us. How much we turn to God and pray, oh, please forgive me for my sins. Oh, please help me. So quickly we forget when the so-called good times start again. And thus we're left to the mercy of time. All destroying time. If you say to somebody that no, you need to surrender right now, then they'll say, oh, you're fanatical. We've got plenty of time, it's a slow process. Yes, it's a slow process for the slow, and it's a fast process for the sincere. If anyone has the slightest real intelligence, then they understand that there is no time to waste. Somehow or other, we need to surrender to Krishna now. Are there any questions or comments?